Well, welcome to Thursday. Hope it has been, shall we put it this way, not too eventful time for you and yours coming off of this tropical storm that caused so much distress and an awful, awful lot of, shall we say, negative anticipation going in. The consensus is, boy, it could have been worse, and we definitely did dodge a bullet on that. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to Perspectives for our regular Thursday program, and we will have a follow-up, just a program note, on the storm coming up during a very special extra edition of Perspectives tomorrow here on WFSU. We'll be bringing in folks like Leon County Administrator Vince Long and City of Tallahassee Deputy City Manager Reese Goad and a couple other folks to talk about the aftermath of the storm and the preparation that was running up to it and how, my gosh, the power came back on. But not everywhere, and more on that to come in just a moment. If you want to be part of the program, you are always welcome to do so telephonically at 414-1234, our local number. It's 800-926-8809 if long distance, perspectives@wfsu.org if you want to email. And if you've been tweeting like a person possessed and you want to hop on the line that way, our handle is @WFSUPerspective. Well, during the second half of the 16th century, the Kingdom of Spain established a chain of missions in La Florida from St. Augustine west through Tallahassee to Pensacola, as well as into what is now southeastern Georgia, and I think over on some of the Sea Islands and all over the place. The purpose of these outposts, ostensibly to convert the Native Americans to Christianity. But the missions also had a real nice added benefit of discouraging other countries from colonizing the region. Now, from October 5th through the 7th, Monticello's famous opera house is going to be the site of a very special gathering. It's called the Spanish Missions in Florida and the Borderlands Conference. And we're going to be talking about that today and a lot of other things that relate to the Spanish mission era and how that legacy continues to reverberate even today in this part of the country. So we'll go around and meet some people, some of whom you may already know, such as Jack Carswell, whose family connection to Jefferson County goes back nearly 200 years now, Jack?
Next year will be 200 years.
Oh, my gosh. You don't look a day over 198. That's right. Well, it's so good to have you back on today.
Thank you.
We also welcome David Warwick, Assistant Associate Scholar for the Osceola Research Institute. And it is good to see you, David. Thanks so much for coming in.
Happy to be here.
All right. Dr. Tanya Perez of the FSU Department of Anthropology, the newly relocated Department of Anthropology. Now, neighbors with us out here. Dr. Perez, good to see you.
Good morning. Nice to see you as well.
And we welcome back a writer, photographer, Jefferson County, I guess, official or unofficial historian, Ann Holt. Did you finally get that on your business card?
Unofficial, I'm sure.
And thank you very much. And also for organizing this gathering here. Talk about this conference for the benefit of those folks who might be saying, wow, I know nothing about the mission era, but I'd like to know more. What's going to be going on with it?
Well, the missions we're interested in particularly existed between the Osceola River and the Occoquan. This is local history. We will have 16 scholars from across the nation, mostly borderlands scholars on missions, who will tell us all about perhaps why the missions were there, how they were operated, why they were destroyed, how they were destroyed, just a general interesting history of a wonderful period of our history that many people aren't really up on yet.
Well, we mentioned that at the beginning, that this is something that I don't think we really get into it in what is now called the social studies curriculum. We don't have formal history the way that maybe we used to in the regular scholastic education. But Jack Carswell, again, tapping into why this is so important to us today. Oh, wow, the Spanish had missions in Florida, big deal. Why is this a big deal?
Well, because I think it's the sort of old thing that you hear people say, is we still stand on the shoulders of those people who went before us. And it's interesting, when I was a boy in Jefferson County, my uncle was a watermelon farmer, and he was always looking for an old field to plant his watermelons, because those were where the watermelons grew the best. And I didn't know that, really, for a long period of time. What he was really looking for were the Indian fields, the fields that the Apalaches and the sort of indigenous people, they're farming, and they had cleared and burnt. And those fields were always the most fertile and produced the most watermelons.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because certainly there were no commercial fertilizers available back then. And the Native Americans, rather a different approach to agriculture than perhaps the Europeans who came later, where they'd plant, exhaust the soil, and then move on and just keep on moving, which was great for westward expansion, but it wasn't really a sustainable way to grow crops. The Native Americans, they knew all this. Like, what was that? They would, like, sometimes plant fish?
Well, Dr. Perez probably knows more about that than I do, but it's interesting that how much we're affected. You don't realize it, how much we're affected by what went on before us. And most of us are unconscious about that.
David Ward, from the Acilla Institute's perspective here, an important conference. You're bringing in some real heavy-duty historical and anthropological firepower into this whole thing, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. The people that we are bringing in here and exposing a very important part of our history that's lesser known than most of it after the English came into the area and when the American experience came a part of it. But in Jefferson County, there are at least four old mission sites, perhaps five, they barely scratched the surface with actual excavations there, and the whole history there is the first international trade that was taking place in what is now the United States took place right there. The first wheat fields in what is the United States were right in that area. It's an amazing part of the history.
Yeah, we've had this discussion before, I think, where we are learning more and more about just how significant this area was in early history, not just European history, but also Native American history, and that along that Acilla Basin here, we are going back further and further and further in time than we ever thought. Dr. Perez, how far back are we going now? It used to be like, 10,000 years, that was it. We're predating that now.
That's true. The most recent research out of the Department of Anthropology at FSU is dating human occupation in this area to about 14,500 years ago. So, yeah, it's pretty old.
That's incredible. And we think of that, if we think of it at all, as, this was wild, untamed wilderness for all these years. And then the folks came from Europe, and the rest is history. But there was plenty of history before that.
That's right. Plenty of history. Lots of history beneath our feet, in our backyards, in our communities, for us to find out about and share, so that everybody here in Florida and South Georgia, South Alabama, realize that we are not the first people here. I mean, this land has more than 200 years of history, and it's really interesting history. And particularly, like, here in Tallahassee. Tallahassee is the capital of Florida. It's been the capital of something for a long time, even predating the missions. It was a capital area. So there's so many things that archaeology and history can teach us that we can share with other people that are interested. It's really exciting, and this conference is a huge part of that.
Yeah, the Apalachee settlement here was a major metropolitan area in the scale of the day.
It was. And it sits, less than a half mile from our current Capitol building. It was called Anhika, and now the site is called the DeSoto site. It's where the Governor Martin House is at, and the state archaeology offices are located there. So, yeah, it's pretty impressive how long this has been a hub of social and political life.
Yeah, no, we've done a lot of digging around Mission San Luis, and that was a beautiful reconstruction and all that. But that's pretty well tapped out as far as the dig, from what I understand, is concerned. But there's still more stuff out there?
Yeah, and actually I'm starting a field project there in January.
Really?
Yeah, I'll be teaching the 16-week FSU Archaeology Field School there starting January of 2018. And as you mentioned, there has been a lot of archaeology that has been done there. And the result of that field work has been the reconstruction of the church, the reconstruction of the council house, the fort, the convento, and other areas. My main focus will be on the Apalachee areas and looking for where the Native Americans were living and working and going about their daily lives within this blended community of indigenous people and Europeans.
Oh, I want to get more into that because we still think we remember cowboy movies and stuff where the Native Americans were here and the Europeans were there and they were hostile and always at war with each other. That sure was not the case here, at least in our area. And Ann Holt, you say that there are more mission sites to be delved into in this area that we barely scratched the surface of?
The history says there were 14 missions in the Apalachee province, which I described, it's the Red Hills of Florida, the fertile, truly fertile part of Florida, always has attracted settlement. Where the Apalachee lived has attracted settlement. The conference will span the years. Some scholars will speak on very early mission history, and some will speak on much later history. And I think that's what's going to make it extremely interesting to everyone, scholars and lay people. And one of my missions in talking to these scholars is urging them to remember that I'm a historian, I have a PhD, but I'm not schooled in mission history, so they have to speak in plain language to me. And so that way, all lay people will be able to enjoy the conference.
We like simple, understandable things. More on Perspectives coming up as we talk about the upcoming Spanish missions in Florida and the Borderlands Conference happening October 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Monticello Opera House. Also, your calls, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives. Now, remember, this is our regular Thursday edition, but we are adding to the schedule this week just because of what happened with Tropical Storm Irma. So we're doing a retrospective on that in a very special Perspectives tomorrow, also from 11 until noon here on WFSU. And we'll have some of our city and county officialdom and first responders and all that, and be taking your calls and emails on that one as well. Today, those Spanish missions in Florida and the Borderlands Conference coming up the first week in October over in marvelous Monticello. And we are joined by Patrick here on line one. Thanks for giving us a call, Patrick. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, we're doing good. You okay? You survived the storm all right?
Yes, sir. We sure did up here. I'm calling you from Lake Park, Georgia.
Well,
and I was just wanting to see if you could give me some information about the Spanish mission that was located, I believe, in Lake Park up here.
Let's see, because that would be on I-75, just
yes,
over
sir.
The
yes, sir.
Just over the Georgia line. So let's see. That's we're doing a quick poll here for you, Patrick, to see if anyone has
no
any.
No problem.
Okay, because there.
I would try to say the name that I believe it is, but I believe I don't think I could really say it. It's a pretty long word, and I don't think I could come close to pronouncing it right.
Well, maybe can you spell it?
let's see. I believe it was CATCHPILE. Does that sound at all?
Catchpile.
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 Yeah.
Let's see. Well, Dr. Perez, you were shaking your head there. You don't have any immediate information on it. So
I don't, but there is a robust archaeology program in the state of Georgia with online resources that someone in Georgia may have better information if it's on the Georgia side of the state line.
Okay. Well, we can check on that, Patrick, because we think of Spanish missions and whether it's like the reconstruction at Mission San Luis or the Alamo in San Antonio, we think of these as formal buildings of some kind. Were all of the missions that built out, or were there smaller, less developed kinds of missions?
Well, the missions in this area would have no buildings left to identify the site.
But they were, I mean, going back to your question, so we look at places like Mission San Luis, which has reconstructed buildings. Most other missions in the outlying areas would have had a church building, but they wouldn't necessarily have had as big of a council house, and they wouldn't have had the fort there either. So they would have had a church, a Catholic church, and a place for the priest to live. Possibly a council house, but not necessarily. And then around that would have been, we suspect, houses for the villagers, of course, agricultural fields, maybe some other buildings. But most of the work that has been done from an archaeologist standpoint, because as Anne mentioned, the buildings are no longer standing, we have to look below ground, has been really focused in on the main part of it, which has been the church and buildings attached or immediately around it.
And many of these places, such as what Patrick was talking about around Lake Park, those areas may have just fallen into disuse for hundreds of years. It was, 1704 that Mission San Luis was burned when the mm-hmm. British came through. Was that about the same time frame, Jack? Was everything else burned out around that same time?
I think it was. It was a concerted effort to break the back of the Spanish mission system and to destroy it. We had an example of where a mission was, and the lady who owned the farm there had a metal detector, and Dr. Meredith was talking about the bells that they had at all the missions. And then they were instructed to destroy those bells because they were iconic to the indigenous people. And while she was telling us about those bells, I've always been a little skeptical of almost everything. So she says, she's telling about the bells, and the lady who owned the property laid the remnants of the Spanish bell, which she had found on the property on the back of the pickup truck. And Dr. Rochelle's eyes got about as big. But, yeah, I think that, and Tanya knows more about it than I do, but the other thing I think is that those missions in a woodland mission, as opposed to the missions in California, they probably moved those a little bit because the resources they used around them, the wood and the stuff in the fields and the stuff, and they might have had to move it over 10 miles or I think they moved. Do you think that's true?
Well, the one that I know of for sure that moved was Patali. After it was, I believe there was an uprising there and it was burned. But that was a native uprising. That wasn't the English. And so it moved to a new location, approximately probably 10 miles away. But one thing they had to maintain, these mission communities, was that they needed to maintain their position along the road between here and St. Augustine, the right. Camino Real. So that was part of why they were located where they were.
Okay, because, David, we have our own Camino Real. It's not in California exclusively. We have our own here.
Yes, it's portions of it are still there. It's the old St. Augustine Road, which one of the first federal roads built by the United States was right along the Camino Real. And you can still see it.
Yeah, very few people, since the advent of U.S. 27 South, most people go there. But if you get on Old St. Augustine Road in Tallahassee and just keep going, eventually it becomes dirt. which is fascinating, and then continues on to St. Augustine. It's still there.
Yeah.
It would take you a long while, but...
But it would be scenic.
It would certainly be scenic. You talk about an early canopy road. That's one right there. Let's see. Who do we have online? Okay, let's see. A clarification on the host comment that conflicts with happened elsewhere, didn't happen here. I'll let Kim finish up on that one, because we have our own Kim Kelling is helping out here today, as she did so nobly during our coverage of Tropical Storm Irma. But now she's doing the associate producer job here today. She is a woman of many talents, our own Kim Kelling here on WFSU. We heard just a second ago, though, Dr. Perez, that sometimes there were native conflicts with the Spanish, so it was not all happiness and light as far as the relationship between those early Spanish settlers and the Native Americans here.
No, it wasn't always happy. There were some instances where there was Native uprisings or revolts against the Spanish that they were living with and among. Part of it I've been doing a lot of background research preparing for my work this coming spring. So part of it was the fact that the Spanish expected able-bodied Appalachian men to perform physical tasks for them, carrying goods, working on the governor's cattle ranch, doing other types of farming activities. And the way the system was set up was that they should be paid for this service, and it was also supposed to be a set amount of time that they would perform these duties. Well, in reality, that wasn't happening. They were being kept in places like St. Augustine for months and months on end, kept away from their families, kept out of their villages, so that the villages were then in a place where they didn't have these able-bodied men to help perform the duties they needed done in the villages as well. So that was one major factor in a lot of the discontent, that the natives were being abused and mistreated, and their hard work was taken advantage of to the detriment of their own communities and themselves. Many of the men died either on treks to St. Augustine or while in St. Augustine from not eating enough, not being fed enough, the elements, and just general mistreatment.
All right. And I think that may hopefully help the person who just left that a comment here on email. We were talking about the traditional perception of the cowboys and the Native Americans being at odds, and here that was true too. But Ann Holt, what was the relationship between those Spanish mission folks and the Native Americans? On one hand, the idea was to come in and to convert them, these poor folks who did not know about Christianity, to show them the light and give them a better way to live. But at the same token, maybe not treating them as full people, as worthy of consideration and equality and all that as the Spanish.
Well, my reading, people don't like to hear it, but in my opinion, they were slaves. But the instruction in Catholicism went truly deep. We had the opportunity to meet a group of Appalachians in Louisiana who tell the story of how they were driven from their homes and their mission in 1704, first to Pensacola, then to Mobile, and then further into Louisiana to escape the persecution of the English Protestants. They see it as Protestant versus Catholic in many instances. And these people tell this story, and I describe it as collapse time, because it is very immediate to them that the land of Appalachia is their home. And they are still very strong Catholics and have stayed Catholic throughout.
And really, these are the first, or the, what, descendants of the first Tallahasseans.
Yes, right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, the Apalachee in Louisiana actually have a tribal council. They have a chief. They operate still as a tribe and are seeking recognition from the federal government and have been for many years. Some of them will be here during this conference and will be, I hope, at several of the events during the conference. And there is a photographic exhibit of them in Monticello right now that people can go and see on Wednesdays and Saturdays, 10 to 2 in the Art Center.
That is 300 years from home, the Apalachee photographs, right?
Yes. And they're going to return here. They're coming for the conference. I think that's so exciting. You want to pinch yourself because these are elegant people. They're tall. They're handsome. They've had a difficult time. And this is their home. And in fact, David's going to take a group of them down the Wasissa and the Osceola River. When the idea of the descendants of these people who lived here for a couple thousand years are coming home to this conference. They're going to stay with all of us in Monticello. David's taking them down the river. I just think that that's hugely exciting.
Oh, my gosh. David, have you met the folks yet? Or?
Yeah, I went early August to Louisiana and spent about 3 days with them. They're wonderful people.
Are they looking forward to this homecoming, essentially?
I think they are. But you have to look at it from their perspective. They've been persecuted for a long time, and it didn't stop after they got to Louisiana and after they were talking about even up to 1915. They were being hunted and killed for their land out there. They have some trepidation about coming out in the open because they've been hiding for so long. But they're excited about coming here and seeing some of their native lands.
Oh, my gosh. For anyone who has ever gone back to the land of their fathers or mothers, as the case may be, that's always, you feel that connection, even if you have never been there. And, you know, one of my great, I haven't done it yet, it's the old one of these years, but to get back to see the family home place in Ireland. And I can anticipate that being there will be transformative. You will feel this connection. It's going to be really great. For these folks here, they ought to be welcomed as heroes. They really should be.
Well, they left their name, if you think about it. If you open a map thing of the United States, their name is all over the eastern part of the United States, the Appalachian Mountains, the Apalachicola River, the Apalachee Bay, and their towns called they're an important part of American history.
Yeah, and they were here. These were the folks who were here when the Europeans came and had been here for how long, Dr. Perez?
That's a good question, because the people that were here at the site of Lake Jackson Mounds Archaeological State Park, which is up by Lake Jackson, likely were the Apalachee before we know them as Apalachee, and how long before that? Thousands of years, likely. Generations and generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the tallest mounds in Florida, the Letchworth Mounds, mm-hmm. are over near Monticello.
And there's so much we still have to... You got to be really... This is like uncharted territory in so many ways.
Well, there has been a lot of work done on Spanish missions here in Apalachee and in other provinces around what was La Florida. But I am very excited because I've worked at mission sites before when I was a student at Florida State. And this time I get to work with my colleague, Dr. Rochelle Marinin, who Jack had mentioned. She did a lot of the work here for the last 20, almost 30 years. And so we'll be working together at San Luis, and it will be really interesting because we're looking at it from a slightly different perspective. We know where the church is at. We know where all the big buildings are. So let's now look at domestic life. And that, I think, will be really exciting, not just for us, but for the people that come through Mission San Luis on a daily basis to visit. They will get to see us in action and learn about what we're finding as we're finding it. And that's pretty cool.
Yes, and even predating the mission time, I'm thinking before there was the Roman Empire, before the Greeks, before the Egyptians, for crying out loud, there was a vibrant culture going on right here in this part of the world. Perhaps some of it, as we had discussed before, Ann Holt, precipitated by what had been going on during the ice ages, forcing people and animals and stuff down into the southeast, and this became such a thriving center of culture and hunting and everything else long before anything comparable was going on in some other parts of the world.
To me, one of the most exciting things about this conference is that ordinary people, the farmer and his wife, the high school student, the retired businessman, can learn about this subject at a conference like this. We keep the conference free because people make donations and want to give us sponsorships to help us keep it free. And people who are just interested in their history can come and enjoy and learn.
Well, that's coming up again, the Spanish Missions in Florida and the Borderlands Conference. Free, you cannot beat the admission charge, at the Monticello Opera House in mighty Monticello, October 5th, 6th, and 7th, from 8 in the morning until 4:30 each day. And you can register early by going to missionsinflorida.com. More on the conference and our ancient history coming up from our expert panel here on Perspectives. If you'd like to add to the conversation, 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809 is long distance, and Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives. Boy, talk about ancient history going back perhaps 12, 13, 14,000 years. And the forebears of those of us who now call Florida home, and what we're learning more and more day by day on what took place during those early days and how it still connects to us right here. And you'll have a chance to learn a lot more from the free upcoming Spanish Missions in Florida and the Borderlands Conference, October 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Monticello Opera House. Oh, and a reminder that you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. If you're just tuning in, thought, oh, I missed the first part of the program. No, you didn't. Go to WFSU.org, click on Radio, pull down the programs menu. We got Perspectives listed there amongst them, and we try to have them up and running as quick as we can after the show airs. Might have a bit of a delay this week because of the staffing challenge we ran into because of Tropical Storm Irma. Everyone's going to be back on deck, though, come Monday morning. By golly, and Dr. Perez, I can see you nodding your head. You're with the FSU Anthropology Department, and it's going to be full tilt for all of us come Monday here in the labors of academia at Florida State. So anyway, you like your new place, by the way?
We love it. It's beautiful. It's like being in a treehouse.
How wonderful.
It is, because we're on the second floor, so we have really, we all have windows in our offices, and we can all see trees. It's really nice.
Instead of a parking lot in Tennessee Street. Yeah,
that's okay. Right.
And before we get back into the discussion again, since we were talking about things of a stormy nature there, Ann Holt, still a lot of folks without a power over in Jefferson County, though, right?
Yes. The lower part of the county has gradually regained power. Some of the lower part of the city has power, but from below, just below the courthouse north, we're out of power right in the city. But they'll get it up as quickly as they can. We're too lucky to complain. We really are. Right. We're too fortunate.
David Work from the Acilla Institute's viewpoint, though, this kind of conference really, though, puts you folks on the map, as we had said before, when you bring in all of these subject matter experts, these historians, anthropologists, all these people who can really give a lot more insight into this very early part of our history that still we're peeling back the layers of this onion.
Well, that's the great part about the conference. We've held the paleo conferences before, and they were very successful. But the really great thing about it is the average person can walk up and speak one-on-one with the leading expert in the field, just like you could talk to your friends and family. And it's a great opportunity, and it's totally free. It's unencumbered by any formality. Just a wonderful venue. The Monticello Opera House is a great venue to hold this sort of conference, too. So there's an informality, but a real exchange of ideas.
Yeah, but you talk about being surrounded by history there. That is just incredible in the I know that there has been much, and you and I have had this discussion before, too, about the supposed spirits and poltergeists that are lurking around the old opera house. But I think that is more the spirit of history that surrounds you in that building. So much has happened in that particular site that is still just resonates today.
I believe so. I'm so thrilled that Acilla Research Institute is sponsoring this. We have the help of the local history association and the Main Street, which started the conferences. But Acilla Research Institute will be working with this sort of thing for the future. We have associate scholars like David and many others. And we believe we will be excavating Mission Site very soon. We're at the present time are doing excavations at Wakulla. We're doing Wakulla 3 at the moment.
I believe so.
And we have, of course, the sites in the Acilla River as well, but the mission sites are on our radar, and we really plan to have a scholar working in them in the near future.
Well, when the excavations began at Mission San Luis, I recall that there was a relatively incomplete picture of what had been on that site, until the anthropologists and the archaeologists, everyone got involved into the dig and were able to do that reconstruction finding where the footers were, like for the church, and the fort was over here and the council house was there. And suddenly when that picture became complete, the reconstruction then was astounding. Who could have envisioned that? Does anybody see anything similar to that happening as the excavations go on at the other mission sites, that maybe there could have been a big building here of some relatively for that time period?
Well, Mission San Luis was the capital. It was the western capital of La Florida at the time. So the buildings, of course, are big and robust. These other missions that we've talked about, the buildings may not have been as robust or as big because they were serving smaller communities. They were not receiving visitors from St. Augustine or Pensacola or other places. And also many of these sites are on private property. So you may not have homeowners that want a reconstructed mission on their in their backyard, right, or in their front yard, as the case may be. So I don't know. That's not always the end goal of excavations. We're trying to find out where buildings were, how communities were laid out, what people were doing from the artifacts, the food remains, and the architectural footprints that were there. And so reconstruction is not necessarily always the end goal. At San Luis, it's a perfect fit for that site, and it's such a great a piece of the puzzle for people to come and have a visual of what these communities look like.
We forget that that was a private thing, too. That was the Messer house.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, right.
Hutchin was my schoolmate.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But that's an old Tallahassee family that goes back a long way.
Yeah.
But for your history here, Jack, you got, oh, my gosh, the realization that you can go back hundreds and hundreds of years and still see family connections that maybe you didn't know existed because of the intermingling here of the, Ben Gunter, who is with Theater with a Mission. He always does something around, Valentine's Day, to show the intermarriage of the Spanish and the Apalachee. And yeah.
Fascinating.
It really is. So our family trees might look a little bit more like thickets.
Yeah. Well, I went to, when I left Tallahassee, I went to Los Angeles, and I lived in San Francisco and Los Angeles, which is a big community as opposed to a small community. And when you're right, when I came home, I was reacquainted with the whole idea of connections. In Los Angeles, everybody's from somewhere else. And so you know them, if you know them for 6 months, you go way back together. And that's not true here. The connections that we have in Tallahassee and in the surrounding communities are complex. And I'll tell you the other thing, as you get older, they're reassuring.
Yeah, and it's reassuring, too, that connection to the land, and surprising how much Native American heritage there is amongst the ostensibly European stock that we have here. You get into West Florida, and it's even more profound, the number of people you say, oh, my gosh, yeah, well, my family was Creek, or I have a connection
like
here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, you talk about cultural diversity, but it is very acute here in this area to a greater degree, I think, than most people realize. And that's part of this conference, too, is reestablishing those roots and seeing where we came from.
Monticello has one very special thing that I notice. They are welcoming, kind people, but you can walk down the street in Monticello and meet people whose ancestors moved there from Virginia or Charleston in the 1820s. Our county attorney's ancestors moved there, 1824, 1825. It's the most amazing thing. That the roots are so deep.
Well, there was, didn't you tell me, when we were there to look at the reconstruction of the old county jail, that the earliest settlers in Jefferson County were around the time of the Pilgrims?
Well, they were 1819. We began to... As soon as the United States acquired the territory, there was a rush. There was a land rush. They were looking for the oil fields because they could start a plantation and make a crop the first year. If they could find an oil field to establish themselves on. And during the 1820s, from 1820 to 1830, a lot of people moved into that area. And they came because the land is good, the Red Hills of Florida. That's what they're talking about, is the agricultural land. That's the reason the big cotton farmers later came into Gadsden and Leon and Jefferson and Madison, because they could find the land to raise crops.
And they were on the shoulders of the Spanish mission folks in the in the 1500s and 1600s, and then on the shoulders of the Native Americans, the Apalachee, who'd been there for thousands of years before that. Right. So, again, this is continually occupied.
Yes, and the scholars, the writers with De Soto commented immediately on the great crops the Apalachee raised. The Apalachee were larger because they had more to eat. They could raise more here.
And that's why they were, in many cases, 6 foot plus.
Yes.
Which probably loomed over the Spanish. They thought, where'd all these tall people come from?
Yeah.
And then the Spanish came and they started griping about the traffic, you know, and it was just...
There you go.
Because I think, what, Dr. Perez, wasn't there something like 3,000 Apalachee or something right below where Mission San Luis is out there towards, well, where the old Department of Anthropology was in that flat area, I think, headed down towards the capital. There was a gigantic Apalachee settlement there.
Well, it was believed that there were 1,400 people that lived at San Luis. That would include the Apalachee, the Spanish, and the soldiers that were there. So outside of that, there would have been communities, yes, 3,000.
It might be pushing it a little bit.
Could be more, could be less. But of course, yeah, where the Department of Anthropology used to be in Varsity Plaza would have archaeology underneath it, although destroyed now with when that building was built. Same thing with the Publix over across Ocala. There, you know, that all would have had people living on it at one time, long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is nothing new. And Jack, again, that predates your family.
Well,
I'll tell you.
But David Ward's told me this. I'm not the scholar at this table, but I think, and Dr. Perez might confirm it, there are probably more people in Jefferson County during that period than there are today. We have about 13,000, 14,000 people over there. And it probably supported a larger population in the 1700s than it does today, which is astonishing. Is that roughly right?
That's roughly right, yeah.
It's an interesting thing that the Apalachee actually sought out the Spanish to send missionaries there to their province in the early 1600s. I think it was 1612. There's a record of the bishop from St. Augustine coming to meet the Apalachee at the secondary capital in called Ivatachuco. Records show that 35,000 Apalachee Indians met the bishop at that site. If that's the case, that's still the largest gathering of people ever in Jefferson County.
That's like a college football game or something.
We had the opportunity to visit that site, and it's an eminence you stand on where the bishop was speaking, and the hill went down away where the people would have been standing. 35,000 people listening to this man speak.
Now that brings up another question, and in the few minutes that we have remaining here, we probably can't get around to answering it, but why, if you had a vibrant, prosperous culture like the Apalachees, would they invite essentially aliens, foreigners, come meet with us and change our ways? How did this happen?
This is just my speculation, based on what I've been reading, is that the Apalachee could see what was happening to the groups around them and to the south of them. The Spanish were not unknown to the Apalachee at that time. They weren't living with them, but they knew of them, and they saw them interacting with other groups. And what was happening to these other groups? They were being decimated. So how do you preserve your culture and your people? If you can't beat them, join them.
Self-preservation.
That's I think, was a lot, large part of it, yeah.
Again, on the traditional, the white folks and the Native Americans fighting all the time, and what happened with the Apache and the Sioux and everything out west, where there was that trying to hold back the tsunami of Western culture that was coming in their direction, or European culture. And here it was, hey, white folks, come on in.
Maybe
be friends.
Maybe not that congenially, but you know, I think part of it, that's something that we need to try to find out in talking with the Apalachee descendants that are living in Louisiana now that will be coming here and doing more historical research and archaeological work to try to find out why would they have asked them to come here? And then once the Spanish came, how did the Apalachee mitigate those relationships? Because the religion was very different. Their way of economic life was very different than what the Apalachee were used to, but yet they made it work. And we don't know what would have happened if they hadn't been burned down in 1704, the missions hadn't been burned in 1704. We don't know what, the Apalachee-Spanish partnership would have looked like. And was it a true partnership? Probably not. But the Apalachee did have a choice, a voice in it. They were part of what was going on at that time.
Well, we have to wrap it up here, folks, but a reminder again, if you want to meet the first Tallahasseans, here is your chance to do so. A delegation from Louisiana, descendants of those Apalachee who were the first, the last Tallahassee Apalachee will be coming back here October 5th, 6th, and 7th at the Monticello Opera House, the Spanish Missions in Florida, and the Borderlands Conference. And David Ward, Dr. Tanya Perez, Jack Carswell, and, of course, Dr. Ann Holt, thank you all for coming in on Perspectives today.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, and we had Kim Kelling and, of course, Taylor Cox working the phones and the other mechanical stuff today. I'm Tom Flanagan. A special Perspectives coming up tomorrow, a retrospective of Tropical Storm Irma. Hope you can join us then.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.